So welcome back to Cambridge Inside Up, part two for March 19th, 2024. And again, I was just at the end of the last half hour was discussing a little bit of my own personal learning curve about some of the, you know, the sort of mini controversy about plans by the city for Linear Park. You know, which again connects the Alewife area up to really it connects up to Davis Square along the old line of the old railroad lines. But certainly the piece in question here is really largely connecting around Cameron Avenue and Mass Ave over to the Alewife station. So anyway, I'm not fundamentally one of your kind of wild-eyed tree huggers, you know, who goes out and does forest bathing, you know, in order to be in tune with the cosmos. But I do have some concerns when a division or subdivision of the Community Development Department that does transportation and environmental planning and has a clear bias towards certain outcomes basically makes sure that a particular design is going to go through, even if there's actually a lot of people up in North Cambridge who have some real questions about it. But has become kind of a rule of sorts in Cambridge public processes is that, you know, you do a dog and pony show to sort of say that you've had a public process, and whether there really is a process or whether anybody's really listening is completely up to, you know, that's highly questionable. As I often like to say, like when they're doing street layout redesigns, like on Cambridge Street currently, and I'm sure in my neighborhood in Broadway in another year or something, they'll pull out a lot of dogs and ponies and then talk about all the wonderful community input that they're interested in along Broadway. But ultimately, the only question they really will be able to affect, it will be something more like the color of the flex posts on the bike lane. You know, so again, I don't want to seem embittered about this, but the Cambridge that I knew when I became sort of civically active back in the late 1980s through the 1990s, where you actually had a sense that people within city government really were working cooperatively with a lot of the citizenry to sort of get best outcomes that took into account as many interests as possible. I'm not so sure that that's really how things work today. So, and I'm not saying that to sort of rag on anybody in particular, but I just think somehow we've lost our way. But that's my own personal opinion. All right. One of the things I thought I'd just briefly mention here, there was a article, actually, I think two articles that came out in the New York Times over the last week. I think one on the 14th, maybe one on the 18th. They may actually be the same article, but you know, sometimes it shows up online on one day and then shows up in print a different day. But it brought up a very interesting question. It was, you know, when the city officials were arguing and passing ordinances, zoning amendments, and more, having the so-called BUDO or BUDERO, you know, Building Energy Use Disclosure Ordinance, you know, which involved a lot of mandates because we want to get everybody off fossil fuel and electrify your car, electrify your home. You know, get rid of gas-fired boilers and replace them with everything electric. You know, and a lot of us just had a lot of questions. And in fact, there was even a city council committee where they really brought in some people from Eversource who were highly skeptical of this sort of, you know, futurism that was being presented by a couple of city councilors. So it was very, and you know, so I kind of was skeptical myself. And so it was very interesting in a kind of a sad, satisfying way to read that apparently now it's the case that there's a lot of, you know, people, a lot more people buying electric vehicles. There's people installing heat pumps, but everything is sort of going more on the grid. So you're using more electrical power. Now the sort of the dreamy eyed folks have this, I think, make-believe notion that somehow solar panels and wind power or tidal power or, you know, fairy power, whatever, is somehow going to power the grid, which is now being taxed to capacity, or not yet to capacity, but there are actually starting to be some concerns about energy rationing and brownouts and things in hot summer months, especially if global warming continues and we actually find ourselves with extra hot summer. Just how much electrical power are we actually going to have available to support these, our electric cars, our electric heating and cooling systems, and everything electric, right? So anyway, the New York Times article basically just laid it out pretty starkly, I think, and not just in around Cambridge, but just so generally, that they're basically saying that the people are responding, more and more people buying electric cars and whatever, and there's a lot more demand. And the fact is the energy generation necessary to support it simply isn't happening at nearly the rate as the consumption is. So, all along, I have personally felt that we had to take a much more cautionary view about how you work your way toward that brave new world. And you can't kind of outpace the capacity to support your new world view. So, in a rather curious paradox, the New York Times article, which I'm not going to refer to it here, I'm not going to link to it right now, but basically said that there's going to be some negative climate results as a result of all of this climate action. Right. In other words, you're going to need more power generation. If you don't have the solar panels and the wind power to do it, means they're going to basically be, powering up the power plants and using fossil fuels in order to support the electrification that we're supposedly consuming so that we can get off fossil fuels. Sort of an interesting little twist. So anyway, I thought it was noteworthy because it's one of those situations where local action, like in Budo, and some of the mandates that are kind of mandate happy local city council were enacting in recent years, how they may very, very well be finding themselves getting far too ahead of the curve, and not being able to even power that which they're promoting. So I think it's something worth thinking about, at least, and maybe leaving open the door open to some possible amendments to slow things down. I mean, they were outraged. People wanted to have everything fossil fueled free by 2030, a lot of people were arguing, well, maybe you really ought to adhere just to the state standard of 2050 or 2035 and whatever. But everybody says, no, it'll go faster, faster, faster. And I thought that was unrealistic. And I think that's proving to be the case. Already it's proving to be the case. So another thing happened, actually. I think the last time we did a program was March 5th, which was the day after the presidential primary. Now, I'm not going to go all off on the presidential primary. To me, American democracy is so darn broken that I think I'm going to vote. I always vote, but I'm, psychologically speaking, I'm basically sitting out this year because I don't really feel like I have a whole lot of say, and I'm not particularly thrilled about that reality. What I thought, though, I would just briefly mention, though, and perhaps I will also navigate to something here, if I can dig it out. Okay. So one of the we have in Cambridge, I mean, for our local elected bodies, we have everything is at large, right? We are elect our city councils, we elect our school committee members, all at large using proportional representation elections. Prior to 1940, really 1941 election, we had wards. So Cambridge had 11. It started out in 1846 with three wards, but then eventually, by the time we went on to Plan E, we had 11 wards. Actually, we had 11 wards the entire 20th century, or at least up to the adoption of Plan E. And The way people, at least one of the mechanisms via which people would organize and try and get things done for their communities was via their wards. Now, nowadays we don't have wards except as a kind of a clerical distinction, but we have ward committees, for each of the political parties, though I personally wonder what purpose they serve, other than as sort of a way for political partisans to sort of hang around, eat some pizza, and congratulate themselves on their righteousness. But I was, and even how they organize these ward committees are, for the political parties is very, seems to me kind of arbitrary and somewhat questionable, I might even add. So I've been in Ward 6 for a pretty long time, and when the powers that be were organizing a slate of candidates, they were very, very thoughtfully made sure I wasn't on it, which was very nice. So one of the things you can do is you can contact a few people in your ward and have them write you in. And apparently, we were entitled to elect up to 35 people in Ward 6. They only had, I think, 17 on their ballot. So if you got as few as 5 votes, you could be elected. So I want to proudly declare that I have received my certificate and that I am hereby certified as a member of the Ward 6 committee, Democratic Committee for the City of Cambridge, as a result of the 10 votes that I got. So I got the twice the legal minimum in order to do it. Now, I don't view myself as a party guy, a political party guy. I'm a registered Democrat. I typically vote for Democrats, but I also vote for Republicans if I think they're better candidates, and I have no qualms acknowledging that. I've always voted for the person and not for the party. But if you think about it, there was a lot of concerns expressed, and it's actually was part of the discussion of the charter, potential changes to the Cambridge City Charter. There's a proposal in the current recommendations to create what they're calling, actually, what are they calling, they have a particular name for it. And I'm actually forgetting what it called. Oh yes, citizen assemblies is what they talked about, which would be somehow issue specific, which in itself is a partisan concept, right? Not everybody organizes around issues. Some people choose to organize around identity. Some people choose to organize around neighborhood, where you live. What are your concerns by neighborhood? So for those people who were tasked with coming up with the recommendations for charters to somehow declare that we're going to try and form, as part of a new charter mechanism, citizen assemblies that would be based around issues. As I say, that is itself a partisan, biased proposal, right? Now you might also argue that if you organize citizen assemblies or ward committees around geography, well, that's biased in its own way. Personally, I'm a little more comfortable with that, just people in your neighborhood getting together, but apparently that just wasn't going to suit them. So anyway, I am now officially a member of the Ward 6 Democratic Committee, but I will say that, if I had my druthers, and someday I'll look up the word druthers, I would like it if, instead of having citizen assemblies is what is being proposed, we actually recreated something in the spirit of the old ward committees. When I'm not suggesting we should have ward councillors or anything like that, but that you could be elected. So you would be an official representative for your ward. You wouldn't have any power. You couldn't pass legislation, but you could get together and maybe even propose things to your elected officials and require them to respond. So it's not just sort of a writing a letter to your congressman, but actually to contact your school committee members or your city councilors, and say, it is the opinion of the elected members of Ward 6 that we should that we should seriously consider requiring eighth grade algebra in our schools because we think it's really, really important. Or we think maybe we would get together in Ward 6 and say, we would seriously like you to revisit some aspects of the cycling safety ordinance because a lot of people in mid-Cambridge are not particularly thrilled with what's coming down the pike, and we would like you to reconsider it. So I think there would be great value in having something like citizen assemblies, but not organized in the way that was proposed. So I would say, please throw out the proposal, but rethink it and at least open your minds to the possibility of creating some kind of vehicle, not based on political parties, right? Because our municipal government and our municipal elections are nonpartisan elections. There are no Democrats, there are no Republicans in our government, local governmental form. And so consequently, political parties and political wards shouldn't be there. But I'm now on the Ward 6 committee, and maybe we'll sort of try and at least get some ideas started that way. The Ward 6 committee could use some serious changes too, by the way. All right, so I think in the remaining time, what I may just do here is to sort of pivot to some of the things that were happening, really yesterday, with a city council meeting coming around. So I'm going to do a little quick share screen here over to my usual snarky comments and such for the meeting from yesterday. So again, it was a reasonably full agenda, but some of the major items that came down as part of this week's agenda that last night's meeting. One was the annual report from the rating agencies, the credit rating agencies, Fitch, Moody's, and Standard and Poor's, where we again get our triple A bond rating from each of the three rating agencies. Now, I was very aware of the fact that we've been getting our triple A ratings from all three agencies for a good long while. I didn't realize that this makes our 25th straight year. So there was a bit of a press release from the city commemorating the fact that we've got it 25 years straight. One thing I wasn't aware of at the meeting last night, it was pointed out in response to a question from one of the councilors that there are only 24 cities in the entire country that have what you would call a triple-triple, that have AAA ratings from all three of the major agencies. Which is not to say that there couldn't be more, but they don't always go to all the agencies. If they get a triple A rating from even one of them, some cities are perfectly satisfied with that. So anyway, we got our triple-triple again. We can feel good about that. If you actually read through the reports, and I encourage people to at least skim them, there are a few cautionary notes in there. I mean, the fact of the matter is that the residential valuations are going up. Commercial values right now are kind of not moving. The iffiest of them all is the office market. And this is of some potentially some importance because if our residential rates continue to rise as they seem to be, albeit a little bit more slowly than in recent years, and the commercial valuations are flat, may well mean that we will see a real sticker shock for single family, two family, three family homeowners come October when the real estate tax bills come. That's exactly what happened in Brookline. And so we may get that. We'll see. But the credit ratings themselves are really good, which means we'll still get advantageous rates when we have to go bond various major capital projects. Another item on the meeting agenda from last night that I always pay attention to is the setting of the block rates for water and sewer. And again, I don't want to go on too much about it, but we were just as a yet another indicator. The water rates, even though sewer rates were climbing steadily, and quickly, really, like, 6% per year, 3%, 7%, 7.5%, 7%, 8% in recent years. The water rates were absolutely flat. We have, for like, 7 or 8 straight years, we were like 0% increases in the water rates. But then 2 years ago, it increased ever so slightly. Last fiscal year, a little bit more. And then they've more than tripled the not the rates, but the rate of increase. So we're going to be seeing in excess of 6 to 7%, or in the vicinity of 6 to 7% increases, not only this fiscal year, but also next fiscal year. I mean, there's some reasons for that, but again, just an indicator of the fact that the city is definitely on a spending spree. Perhaps for nothing but the best reasons, but just be aware of it. There were some other matters of some significance, and again, I won't dwell on them too much, but the Red Line is going to have some shutdowns where they're going to be doing some bus service along the route of the Red Line this summer. We've already had some of those. So there has been some discussion at the City Council committee level in the last few terms about trying to push for a fare free number one bus, which they do for a couple of routes in Boston right now. So anyway, that was an idea floated. So what they're now saying is, well, maybe we should take advantage of the fact that when the Red Line experiences a shutdown soon, that they can, either as a pilot program or as a permanent thing, is to try and make the number one bus fare free. Now, normally I kind of don't like those kinds of ideas, but if you really want to get people out of cars, just telling them to get on a bike is really kind of a airheaded notion. It's nice if they want to do it, but for the majority of people, actually offering them things like inexpensive or fare free bus routes might actually be a much more effective way to move people away from cars. Of course, a lot of us still need our cars to do a lot of things, but if it was a routine trip into Boston or something, the fact that things might be free might actually move a lot more people onto that option. There's another matter that kind of raised some alarms to me. It actually were, there were two orders that were made subject to the charter right by Councillor Pickett. One was a proposal, I think in response to, there's been a phenomenon of, some buyers buying up a, or maybe an existing homeowner taking a two-family or a three-family home, joining units and then turning them into single-family homes, because that's really a big market right now. And so there's a city council order from councilors Sabrina Wheeler, Azeem Wilson, and Nolan, suggesting that there should be some change in the zoning that'll actually make it difficult to do that. And I thought, well, I might even agree with the intention in some respects. But I'm also mindful, and I think I'm just going to sort of step out of this here just to speak directly about this. I live in a three-family home, which I bought in 1985. At that time, rent control was still in effect. But I was going to become an owner-occupied three-family home. But at the time, the second floor, which is where I live now, had been operated as a rooming house. And so, as far as the city was concerned, there were five, count them, five units on this floor, plus others, right? So the city thought this was like a 7 or 8 unit building. Now, I've said, well, yeah, but I'm turning the five rooms of the rooming house back into the apartment that it had been for 50 plus years. And back then, you would have needed a removal permit in order to do that. Now, there was a little loophole in the law that made me legally able to do that. But this is the sort of thing you think people have to be mindful of. If the city starts passing zoning amendments and other restrictions that basically say you can't adjoin units, and even if their intention is just to make it so that people aren't turning three-family houses into single-family homes, the unintended consequences would have, for example, in my case, made it impossible for me to continue owning this building. And I might add that would have prevented me from providing housing at very affordable rents for the next 35 plus years. So I think city councilors and law department really have to think deeply about things, even if their intention is even if everything is very, very well intentioned, because it doesn't always work out exactly as you think it should, right? Anyway, so that was one of the matters of some significance. There's also a proposal that's been going around for a number of years to get rid of what they call exclusionary zoning in favor of, basically allowing multifamily home ownership, multifamily homes in all zones of the city. I'm generally in agreement with that too, but I don't. And again, I'll just only make the point that part of the rationale that was quoted in the order was based on what was basically a student project from a Harvard freshman who basically made a declaration based on nothing that the entire history of Cambridge zoning was based on racial prejudice and redlining and whatever. But in fact, a true accounting of the history of Cambridge zoning does not quite go so simply as that. So to me, sure, I'll agree with the idea of having more flexibility to allow multifamily homes, but I would want to do it in a thoughtful way, and I certainly wouldn't want to base that policy on fiction, which is what the city council was providing, was fiction. So anyway, I think though I could go on some more. We do have a half hour limit for these programs, so. I think what I'll do is I'll pretty much leave it at that for this time. And we'll be back in several weeks. I'm not quite sure exactly how many weeks. So, with another edition then of Cambridge Inside Out.